touches. We have one more storyteller this evening. I'm very excited. If you are familiar with any of the other Nerdlogs podcasts, we hosted a show of his called The Ketchup, which is this really cool, like, post-apocalyptic rock and roll radio show. I love it very much. He's developing a new show for us that will premiere eventually. He has also got, I gotta actually read the title of this show because I'm not gonna remember it. Oh, I lost my paper. Gary, you'll have to say the name of the show, but he's a writer for a new sports show coming soon. Check local listings as well. It's gonna be really great. He'll tell you the name. This is Gary Lucy, everybody. I messed up the introduction, Gary. I'm awful.
That's fine. I know. You're doing a good job. Oh, Eric Garneau, everybody. Give him a hand. Keep it going for yourself if you feel like it. You know, for coming out on a Monday night, that's great. And for everyone who did a story tonight, that is terrific. I am going to read you this one. Put it on paper to not cheat you out of any of my wordsmithery. It's the all new Whacked Out Sports in 4K, which is it's been on for it's terrible. But if there's a rain delay in a baseball game or something, they'll show a Whacked Out Sports, and it's been on forever. But it's fine. Don't worry about it. This is called Long Distance Identity Crisis, or How I Faked My Own Death to Avoid Paying a Phone Bill. How much was the phone bill? I want to say like $1,300. It was a long time ago. How long ago? Summer of 89. Was that a simpler, more innocent time? It truly was. And yet I struggled. I just turned 22, and life was a slippery fish I could not grasp. My mission to forge an identity as a respectable person was exploding on the launch pad due to lack of guidance and common sense. Descending from a long line of dum-dums, feckless lazy bones, and unsavory lowlifes, I took pride in being the first member of my family to go to college. And now, I was the first member to drop out of college. I hated myself, I hated my job, and my first serious relationship had ghosted on me. Do I mean she stopped returning my calls? No. I mean, whenever I went to her house, she'd hide under a sheet and go, woo. Eventually, I got the message. So how'd this phone bill get so high? At the time, long distance was our nation's most precious resource. So expensive, I was too nervous to use it. Nothing I had to say could justify the cost. My chatterbox mom, however, had no such hang-ups. I stupidly gave her the code to charge calls to my number, and charge did. First on some 1-900 party lines, then private chats with her new friends from the party lines, with whom she felt obliged to share my code. Oh. I was underwriting a nonstop interstate yakathon. The late 80s 900 number craze was like a warm-up for the internet explosion of the early 2000s. Dating, sports scores, video game tips, wrestling news, and celebrity gossip were just a phone call away. But there was no free surfing, so it was like paying someone $2 or $5 a minute to read a blog to you. But we loved it. 900 numbers still exist today, but require a credit card up front, so you have a sense of the stakes involved. But back then, the charge went straight to your phone bill, and it was a 50-50 split with Ma Bell, so it felt painless and legit. Am I saying I wasn't responsible for any of the balance due? No. Once the bill got so huge that I knew I could never pay it, I did make some calls to a few celebrity 900 numbers, specifically 1-900 De La Soul. The Daisy Age was in full bloom, y'all. Their album 3 Feet High and Rising felt like the one bright spot in my bleak life. The colorful cover, the catchy songs, the charming interstitial sketches, I wanted to live inside that album so bad. Was 1-900 De La Soul worth $2.95 a minute? Oh, hell no. It was terrible. I was hoping for a peek inside their world that was as vivid and well-produced as the album, but it was just three young guys forced to keep an audio diary on an answering machine, mostly boring details of life on the road, weather, lunch, sleeping stats. Mace, Pastanus, and Trugoy were great artists, but they had no specific wisdom I could use to pull out of my nosedive. So I only called it like 55 or 60 more times, tops, after that. But what about faking my own death? I'm getting there. First, you need to understand more about the nature of my identity crisis. It's exciting. This is pretty good. At the time, my name was Gary Delamore. My mom had married this guy, Nick Delamore, when I was 9. I started using his name right away because I never had a dad, and I wanted Nick to know I was into this. He'd be gone in less than 4 years. But I was stuck with the name all through high school and college. My mom had also gotten into all kinds of financial and legal trouble under the name Delamore. Warrants, DUIs, charge-offs. But then she got married again. Now, as Carolyn Martinez, it was like all that stuff never happened. Her tabula was rasa. I was so jealous. I told her, I wish I could start a new life under an assumed name. And she said, why don't you? And I said, because Nick Delamore legally adopted me and I don't have the money to get it legally changed. And she said, he never adopted you. He talked about it, but he never actually did it. He never even liked you. I could have done without that last tidbit, but the seed was planted. To my mother, legal identity was a very fluid concept. She taught me to sign up for the Columbia House Record Club as many times as you want with fake names. She changed names at least twice in her life before this to avoid bills. I sensed it wasn't the noblest way to start building my respectable identity, but it also felt like my birthright. She told me I'd be stupid not to. I said, I'd think about it, which she took as her cue to go on a reverse charges calling spree. Meanwhile, I wondered, did I have the guts to go through with this? Well, before I dropped out in my last semester, I had read the first half of The Great Gatsby. And Gatsby seemed to be doing pretty well in his reinvented persona. He was the very model of respectable society. That could be me. But I needed one more sign from above that this was the right move, and it came the very next day. One of the three part-time gigs I was holding down at the time was at a bookstore called A Clean, Well-Lighted Place for Books in Cupertino, California. Practically in the shadow of the Apple campus, where I'm sure an alternate universe version of me was enjoying his first post-college job. But at the bookstore in our popular subversive culture section, next to the anarchist cookbook in the Church of Subgenius anthology, I spotted a new book called How to Fake Your Own Death. Basically what you do is, one, go to a cemetery. Two, find the grave of someone born around the same year as you, but who died at a very young age. The younger, the better. Preferably a baby. They recommend looking for grave markers with a lot of cherub statuary, because that usually means kids. So, news you can use here. Once you find one, write down the name and the date of birth, then go to the county registrar and say, I need a copy of my birth certificate. My name is, insert dead baby's name here. Once you get that document, you can start building your own persona, your new persona. I knew there was no way I could do that. My sense of identity was already shattered enough without adding a whole new name and birthday to the mix. This crazy plan was completely off the table. Until about 2 weeks later, when the first big phone bill rolled in. It was the size of the Vogue September issue, with page after page of call details from all the weird cities where my mom's new party friends lived. Moses Lake, Washington, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Platte City, Missouri. The total due so far was like $485, which might as well have been a million at the time. Upon further review, maybe a fresh start is in order. I checked the yellow pages for the nearest cemetery. Then it hit me. I already had a stranger's birth certificate. My driver's license and credit cards all said Gary Delamore, but my birth certificate said Gary Lucy, my mom's maiden name, which I hadn't used since fifth grade. I could be someone else and myself. With beginner's mind, I went down to the DMV and said, I'm finally ready to apply for my very first driver's license, please. I pushed my application and paperwork across the counter, bracing for the worst. But the lady barely even looked up. She just started stamping things. I aced the written portion. I nailed the driving portion, which had taken me 3 times the first go-round when I was 15. So already, my new life was working out way better. In fact, the whole next transitional month was magic. A farewell tour for Gary Delamore and a coming out party for Gary Lucy. Absolved of sin and ready to make a fresh start. This was a great plan. But of course there was no plan. I was no closer to knowing how to live life. As The Great Gatsby discovered, and I would have known if I'd finished the book, you can't run away from yourself. This was around the time of the Exxon Valdez tragedy, and I had a vague notion of maybe driving up to Alaska to help wipe off some otters. Then working on a fishing boat or something, but I basically kept doing the dumb stuff I'd always done, only this time it counted on my new permanent record. Heading for home. I moved in with a friend around the corner who had a spare room. I'd still drop by my old place to pick up the mail, since dead men leave no change of address cards. And the phone bills kept coming. First bigger, then redder, then smaller, then nothing. Victory! Except I hadn't won. Several months later, a collection agency caught up with me. Had I read further in How to Fake Your Own Death, I would have realized I needed a new social security number, too. Details. I settled the phone bill for around 25 cents on the dollar eventually. I called my mom, hinting maybe she should chip in. She took a different view. Are you stupid? Never pay a collection agency. The phone company already wrote off the loss. Didn't I teach you any better than that? Epilogue. My life's downward spiral would continue for another 3 solid years before I moved to Portland and eventually started to figure stuff out. Today, I've managed to build a life I'm pretty proud of, yet I sleep with one eye open. Because I know the founding document of my respectable identity is still a driver's license obtained under false pretenses 27 years ago. But let's keep that between us. Earlier this year, I got a Kickstarter pitch from De La Soul, raising money for their new album. So I pledged $25, and in the memo I put, would have been more, but I gave in a past life. Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh. Man, it is such a pleasure for me to have Gary on my show. He makes